U.S. forces are now preparing for a June assault on the Taliban center of operations in Kandahar City.
The bottom line of our effort is to stop the momentum, break the momentum that the Taliban has enjoyed now over the course of the last couple years.
Analysts expect even more U.S. casualties.
The general notion that Afghanistan in 2010 could be twice as deadly as it was in 2009 is not unreasonable. We could lose 500 or 600 people this year. We lost 300 last year.
National Security Advisor Jim Jones told reporters traveling with Mr. Obama on his surprise trip to Afghanistan that the president delivered a stern warning to Karzai to clean up corruption. It's not a new message, but it does take on new urgency as the Afghan government moves in behind coalition forces in Marja.
Welcome back, everybody. Your mothers, your fathers, your sisters, your brothers, your aunts, your uncles, your nephews, your nieces, your sons and your daughters are fighting to keep us safe in Afghanistan. And joining me on the hotline to kind of dissect a little bit of what we just heard from Fox last night is Scott Bates from the Center for National Policy. And, of course, you should be getting his email updates by going over and signing up at scottbates.us. Good morning, Scott Bates.
Oh, good morning, Jim. It's good to be with you.
It's good to be with you, too. That was your good friend Michael O'Hanlon, whose analysis says we can expect to see casualties rise.
Well, that's right, and Michael is an excellent analyst. He faced a lot of criticism, actually, for being very honest about the Iraqi surge and how it actually was going to help bring stability. So my hat's off to him. And when he says that we can expect double the casualties, I agree with him wholeheartedly because our troops are engaged in more areas and doing the heavy lifting. When we're talking about military operations in Afghanistan, the tip of the spear are American troops, not Afghans. They're coming in behind us. They're not in front with us.
And let me make a point about Michael that I'm sure Scott will back me up on, because Michael's been a guest on this show twice, and he's actually a friend of Scott's. Michael is not making a comment on the President Obama's surge. He's not making a comment on the war in Afghanistan. He is an analyst, just as he was an analyst when he talked about the surge was actually working in Iraq. He's not making a political comment. He is just simply telling you what he thinks is going to happen. And he's a guy who's been there just like you, correct?
Well, that's right. He's been there at least as many times, if not more, and out there with frontline commanders. So that's what I respect, are people that, regardless of party affiliation, are going to give the unvarnished truth and analysis as they see it, and then decision makers can make their choices.
Well, that's what think tanks are supposed to be, and that's why we liked Michael. We liked him coming on. He's very dispassionate. It's why I like guys like Colonel Ralph Peters, who really is very dispassionate. He agrees with you and I that I would rather see a counterterrorism than a counterinsurgency. But those people who believe in the counterinsurgency point to the fact that it's been successful. It's in its first assault, it was successful. They're moving on to yet another assault now. But success in the short term doesn't always mean long term. The soldiers are going to, as far as I'm concerned, they're going to win every battle you put them in. But after you pull them out and move them to another area, do the bad guys take over the area you just took?
Yeah, I don't think it's a good sign when we see President Obama having to fly over for basically a six-hour visit, and most of it is actually about a 40-minute visit with President Karzai, the meat of which was telling him to clean up his act. That's not encouraging, because we already read him the Riot Act after he won his second term, and that didn't seem to stick.
What do you and Peters have breakfast together or something? That was it's really good to know, because what you know is that well, maybe not so much, but Colonel Peters and Scott Bates come from two opposite ends of the spectrum. One's a military guy, the other's a statey, and not only that, but a statey under Clinton, and although his advice was used under the Bush administration as well. So it is unusual that we have these two sides meeting. Plus, many of my military friends are saying, look, this is what the general wants us to do, but we're not sure, at least in Afghanistan, it's the right thing to do. Still,
I have to say, Jim, I looked at the president's trip, and I thought, you know, the message that really needs to be given to Karzai, I would suggest, is you're not the only guy here that can get the job done. I think that's the only way you can motivate people sometimes.
Well, that's...
And, you know, I mean, it's one thing to say that we need a stable Afghan government. It's another to say, is he the one that can do it? I think the jury's still out.
I would imagine that the jury is still out. One of the things that Ralph said yesterday, which I think you were alluding to, is Ralph said the same thing. He said, look, going for a six-hour visit in the dead of night is sending the wrong message to Pakistan. It's sending the wrong message to the Taliban. It is sending the wrong message to the Middle East, especially since we've had people who've gone to Afghanistan and done a walk and shake hands thing right through the streets of the capital city. And he comes in the middle of the night. Ralph thought that sent the wrong. If you're going to go, you might as well go and do it right.
I agree. I'm a little crazy this way, though, because when, for example, President Bush on 9/11, you know, hopscotched around the country from bunker to bunker, I thought that was the wrong signal, too. I thought he should have gone back to Washington and faced whatever danger people in Washington faced. And I think presidents should do that. I mean, they say, well, the Secret Service tells me, so what? You're the commander-in-chief. And I'd like a little more Teddy Roosevelt and whoever's our president.
Well, I hear you on that. Valerie Jarrett, by the way, was on This Week with, I guess it would be This Week with Jake Tapper. And Jake Tapper asked her a couple questions concerning Iran. And I wanted to get your comment on this. Let's listen into her.
Contrary. In fact, over the last year, what we've seen when the president came into office, there was a unified Iran. Now we're seeing a lot of divisions within the country, and we're seeing steady progress in terms of a world coalition that will put that pressure on Iran. So, no, I think that we have a strong force in the making, and Iran will back down.
Iran will back down. Is there any indication that they're backing down, do you think?
No. In fact, I think the opposite. Well, I'm just being honest here. I'd like to recite the talking points.
I know you would.
Be doing anyone a service, Jim.
If you guys knew Scott like I did, you know how badly he wants to align himself with the talking points. But like Mike O'Hanlon, you know, you guys get in a lot of trouble for telling it like it is. You know that?
You know, but in the long term, it helps. It helps the country and it helps the president. Here's the thing with Iran: is the opposition is on the run, and it's a sad thing to watch. They're being rounded up. They're not growing. On the other hand, you know, I have seen a little movement toward hard sanctions that will humble this government and bring them to their knees. Those are the kind of sanctions that are going to be necessary. Otherwise, they'll keep doing their development of nuclear fuel that can be used for nuclear weapons.
Israel's getting nervous here. And in many ways, I don't blame them. As we talked about last week, you can hear the desperation in their voice. Now, a lot of it probably is paranoia, but it's paranoia that comes with experience. I guess the thing that makes me nervous is Iran continues its steady march. The Western world continues to fiddle with sanctions, and Israel continues to say, if you guys don't do something, we will. This is not a good combination, Scott.
It isn't, and if Israel does do something, we had better not chastise Israel, I would suggest, because we're almost placing them in a posture where they have to take action. And so I'd really hate to see that play out, that they would have to do that, number one. And number two, if they did something, then we would scold them, which is, you know, probably what would happen. But that's where we're headed.
Well, the president's getting good marks publicly in terms of foreign policy. And I can understand that. I mean, nothing's, you know, he's pushing ahead in Afghanistan and everything else seems to be copacetic. But when you dig underneath, when you dig out, he's dealing with Iran, how he's dealt with Israel. I don't know. I just think things could explode. And if they do, I hope he has a handle on it.
We will find out. I think that this White House has had to deal with a lot at one time, and they're starting to get that down. I'm not so sure in the first year. I think it was a little rough sledding, but hopefully they will be prepared to deal with more than five crises at the same time, because that's what we have in this world nowadays.
And five is going to seem small probably 5 years from now for whether he's president or their next president. Five is probably going to seem small. The world keeps shrinking, Scott Bates, which is why someone like you is so doggone important to all of us, that you keep your work up. And I don't want you going back over there for a while, because I've met the family. It's a lovely family. You stay home and stay safe for a while.
Well, thanks. And I am most concerned about the 2 inches of water in my basement right now, so that will keep me home.
Are you kidding? How the heck did that happen?
As you know, I put a lot of money into fixing up my basement, but I live in Stonington, Connecticut. We're getting hammered. So I am actually right now in D.C., but this morning at 4 a.m. before I took off, I personally swept a lot of water into the sump pump, and I'm hoping against hope that it'll hold.
Scott lives right down on the water, and it's, hey, you get what you pay for, you know what I'm saying, Mr. Bates? Well, listen, you take care. My listening audience and the United States of America cannot thank you enough for all the work you have done, not just for what you've done in the Middle East and helping those people, but what you've done to stabilize the Middle East and keep all of us safe. For that, you are a true American hero, Scott Bates, and we thank you for your service, brother.
God bless.
God bless you too. Scott Bates, everybody, from the Center for National Policy, scottbates.us. Make sure you go there. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. We are on the home stretch of hour number two of Sandoff, Connecticut. I want to thank Scott Bates for joining us and Chris Edwards from Cato for joining us this morning. They've added so much. Scott Bates and the folks at Cato have been so good to us, and I want to thank them for joining us. Interesting thing, we have Neil Cavuto had a businessman on last night, a steel maker. Runs a steel company in Ohio. He detailed the cost to himself, which runs into the millions of Obamacare. I'm going to play for that for you in the next half hour, in the next hour, rather. But right now, before I go back to your phone calls, Joey, it is time for a global warming update.
It's Man Bear Pig. I told you it was real. Look again. There. Half man, half bear, and half pig. Do you see it?
Yes, we see it, Mr. Gore.
Something big is going on, and the American people need to know what. I'm off.
Thank you, Mr. Gore. James Lovelock. If you don't remember James Lovelock, he was part of that whole group at the University of East Anglia, is the subject of a Guardian article this morning, and the headline alone should be enough for you. James Lovelock, humans are too stupid to prevent climate change. In his first in-depth interview since the theft of the University of East Anglia emails, the scientist blames inertia and democracy for lack of action. Humans are too stupid to prevent climate change from radically impacting on our lives over the coming decades. This is the stark conclusion of James Lovelock, the globally respected environmental thinker and independent scientist who developed the GALA theory. Is that the way it's pronounced? The GALA theory? It follows a tumultuous few months in which public opinion on efforts to tackle climate change has been undermined by events such as the climate scientist emails leaked from the University of East Anglia and the failure of a Copenhagen climate summit. I don't think we've yet evolved to the point where we're clever enough to handle a complex situation as climate change, said Lovelock in his first in-depth interview. The inertia of humans is so huge that you can't really do anything meaningful. Lovelock, 90, believes the world's best hope is to invest in adaptation measures, such as building sea defenses around cities that are most vulnerable to sea level rises. This is kind of like building bomb shelters, right? Dan, we'll come to you next. Let's check on traffic with Nicole. Hi, Nicole. Oh, my goodness. You got to hear what Lovelock says here. Lovelock says, where is this? Oh, he goes, one of the main obstructions to meaningful action is modern democracy, he added. Even the best democracies agree that when a major war approaches, democracy must be put on hold for the time being. I have a feeling that climate change may be an issue as severe as a war. It may be necessary to put democracy on hold for a while.
It's Man Bear Pig.
Yeah, Mr. Gore. Let's go to Dan. Hi, Dan. Welcome to the show.
Morning, Jim. How are you doing this beautiful day?
Good, thank you. Just putting democracy on hold.
Yeah, well, it needs to be because it's getting in the way of the Constitution is getting in the way of the people.
Really? That pesky Constitution. I wish they'd do something about that.
The reason why I'm calling is I was listening to your interview with Chris Edwards, and he brought up some points I think that need to be clarified. First of all, he's against the fair tax being enacted because he feels with this crowd in office, it'll just tack it on top of the income tax. Well, he needs to keep in mind that for many decades, an overwhelming majority of the time, the Democrats have controlled Congress. So they could have passed a value-added tax on top of the income tax long ago if it weren't for one thing, and that is that the Congress knew they would feel the wrath of the American people if they did so. But in terms of numbers for the Democrats, there was nothing stopping them from doing that other than the people. And secondly, the fair tax is a sales tax. The fair tax supporters never said it isn't, but it's not a value-added sales tax because it will only tax once at the final point of sale.
Yeah, I tried to make that point, Dan, because I knew you'd be calling, but then again, you made the point as well. So,
right. And then the other concern.
Well, I've run out of time, Dan. Do you want to be put on hold?
Do you mind?
No, I don't mind. Ray, you'll be right after Dan. Fill up the lines. It's You Guys the Rest of the Way. We'll be right back.